model program. The first is the technical one, which we think we can pick and back because we've got the hard copy, so we will copy and take the presentation. The other one is I see that some members are taking their position to work so seriously that they prepare to do their substitution to put this week again, even after a certain long competition period. So, matter of the opposition has bypassed the commission, also because they're taking their party conference very seriously, which is devastating. And I don't know whether they're standing for the leadership of the party because the prime minister is so we are going to proceed anyway. And we're not wasting time because we already have lots of people there. I'm going to allow the team from National Treasury to take us through the regulation. The team from National Treasury is made up of Mr. Chief Lay from the Administration, the Chief Director, responsible for the Ministry of Finance and Banking Act. And he is with the Director of the MSA.
Always a pleasure to come before you and present some of the hard work that you put in place as technicians. So if the technology let us down, perhaps we can then go through the slides. The intent and object of the regulation, I think it's important to get the context right. You may know, and many of the members of the MFMA committee before, we took us almost 2.5 years for the MFMA in place to some really good, robust debate in Parliament. In keeping with that, there is a provision that requires further consultation in putting through any regulation. And what we've been doing is consistently applying that provision in publishing drafts for public comment through the normal processes that the government said there, and then flowing through finalizing comments. This is an ideal opportunity to raise, I think, a very topical issue around minimum competency regulations. Taking the lead from the white paper, they set a systematic program to develop high-level management and frontline working capacity in municipalities. Also taking the lead from the constitutional provision 1.4.1 by the other measures on strengthening the municipal capacity. That's added to the support measures we have to put in place. But it effectively to meet the objective of the Act, and we do know the challenges we face when we started to implement the PFMA, and I think it's the municipal level, because it's two extreme municipalities, I think it's just a vast number categories of municipalities, different capacity levels, different circumstances that apply, and we need to take account of those as well. So, in essence, we want to try and improve the capacity, skills level of the officials, and how the current skills is going to be key, and then taking forward the new skills. Address the financial management challenges, and there are many. In the last 3 years, while trying to implement the Act, we have found some very positive signs, but also others who are waiting for the date in to kick in before they really take place. So in certain municipalities, there's going to be a question. Reinforce the sustainable practices and leading to improved service delivery. We started with some work already, and the research that was done with the project document in the Blue Book that we produced last year, through assistance from the demarcation board, from DPRG, other parts of government. We found that the research on page 2 of 278 senior managers, they do give you a fair spread of what the challenges are like. There's limited data in certain instances, the pre-matric qualification, many with undergraduate degrees, many with degree or diplomas, however, may not be in the field and area, and very few have postgraduate diplomas. So it does say that the program skills are definitely required. This is the minimum level for those teachers. And we looked at the research further, we found that the teaching profession is 39 amongst the senior managers, 27 finance officers, 38 legal professionals, public administration, 103. So it gives us a good feel of the different types, although at a higher level, and we believe there's much more work needed here to be able to really get a sense of what is the proper skill that is there at the moment. We've lost a few well-skilled people over the last 2 or 3 years, and we need to grow them. So this research just gives us a sense that there's been a clinical study done. Work is out there. I think you see it from the demarcation board website. You will find a far more detailed information than in the guide. So if members wish to see what at the municipal level demarcation site is there. The background to the MFMA enabling clauses, Section 83, Section 107, and Section 119 of the MFMA. And Shepherdson here, I'd like to maybe remind members of the 2 books that we've issued already. And if members require any of them, more than willing to bring more and send more to you. It's the MFMA pocket book, and it's a guide for counselors that helps the counselors understand the MFMA. Anyone need copies of the accounting officers, senior managers, CFOs, and finance officers. It also applies a big area of supply chain reform. And here, we really need much of these officials to be better schooled, better skilled in the area to be more competent and to be able to address issues more consistently. Within the plan, the regulations apply to the various officials. I think the big part of the security of the legislation is to be able to differentiate, as we said in the open, to be able to differentiate how you apply the cost of the product. So the one size fits all may not be really appropriate. However, when we start to draft, we looked at all the different areas of possibility, putting out the guides correctly. And we work with one example of the guide for the on page 4, the members would recall that the 25 municipalities in Christian Tech is high, medium, and low. At the initial launch of the MFMA, it was 50 high capacity, 107 medium, and 137 low of the 284. That period of the grace of 1 year through the period is now here. From the 1st of July 2007, all municipalities were pushing in terms of the capacity categorization on financial management level. In order to draft this of minimum competencies, we looked also at
the last thing. Okay.
The MFMA came into effect, it was passed in 2003, it came into effect on 1st July 2003. the capitalization of the 284 municipalities at that time. Fuji High Capacity was designated, 17 medium capacity was designated, and 157 low capacity was designated. Based on the research that was done when we effectively implemented the Act in 2003. Now, that's another regulation already on the Treasury website, so the researchers can draw that down and say, with a list of municipalities showing high, medium, and low. So, anything that requires that to the office, that's one of those processes. Linked to that, and the way that the strategy was done, we looked at the functions of the municipality performed. So, in essence, the municipality has more functions to perform. It requires more skills, a higher level of skills as well, to be able to perform it. And then the capitalization was then sort of up. There is a clear line that was drawn. And maybe the right line is maybe the inappropriate line. But to the confrontation with municipal officials, with CFOs, and with other colleagues working in local government, this has been quite a comfortable area that they look. The private part of the municipality that is less than 500 million, the 250 municipalities that make that up. Largely, and then on the 500 million and greater, the 17 municipalities. And the correlation between high, medium, and low is quite nicely seen by that as well. But we're very close to the community. Look at how we classify municipalities. So a simple example, the metro, the clear budget size would also include municipal entities. So in the geography, you would have 15 or 16 entities forming parts of the collective to make up the geography. And that means if we look at the first slide on the important area of further confrontation that was undertaken, you would find we had already discussions, technical discussions, with colleagues in DCLG that work on the capacity training part of DCLG. We had discussions with FAUDA, officials of FAUDA, we've had discussions with provincial departments for joint coordination between the international implementation. We've had discussions as well through the DPLG with PPSA to look at the processes and with selected municipalities. So what is that's the first round of technical work that we're going to focus on. Then we had the regional workshop during April. And what we've done there trying to ensure, thank you, have a strong we try to get to the regional end. So we combine the three provinces. We have one Cape Town, we have one Free State, we have one between Limpopo and Mpumalanga border, which spread far away, but we went to the people to be able to engage them on this. And we engaged 538 people, 470 municipal officials, 31 members of FAGA, EPLG, National Department, Provincial Local Government Department, and the Provincial Association. And at every of these visits, we went to the university and we said, join us in these meetings so you'll be able to understand what is it that you require to do further that you're not doing at the moment. And that really helps support where we are at this moment. Complement other government sectors, now that's the bigger one public service issue that's coming to the fore, and also other things that we have with the CTAS and the other institutions that serve the public government. We've made sure that the result of it is consistent with the principles and with the regulations that are in the system act, including the performance regulations that were recently issued by the EDRG. So that consistency is there with the other one. The support implementation area, we think we definitely need to support municipalities to get them going. in a regulation to walk away. We have to put in somewhere. And we pray those regulations will support the municipal manager to implement and to execute the responsibility to find the municipal manager among the many members of the county. It also assists in the establishment of the budget and treasury office. You may know they never made one chapter dealing with the establishment of the budget and treasury office. And that's where the CFO gets his or her lead from in terms of the responsibilities that always rest in the ministry of that. So there is a consistent coming through that. Strengthen the skill of the top management team. Now when we look at the top management team consistently with the system back and especially with the system together, the members, we then started to look at how does this assist those people in fact being a manager. You would have to have the right competencies for an engineer, for example, to do infrastructure. You have to have the right competency for a safety and security officer. But we're not covering those, but we're covering part of financial management. Because if you look at the municipal operation, then head of department is also responsible for the budget, also responsible for execution, management, control, project, all the issues, including the budget. So we then say, let's expand that to be sure that it does cover some part of the relevant top management level. Supply chain units, what we've been doing over the last 2 years is implementing the supply chain section of the Act and also the regulation that was issued. We've gone to municipalities to find out what are the challenges they experience in actually implementing from a technical perspective. In some municipalities, there's a shared committee system. In other big municipalities, you're able to separate it. So we say, and whenever we have a discussion with the supply chain officials, and we have these regular quality indicators and so forth, we find that the supply chain officials often say, we need to be elevated to another level because it's so critical. The procurement cycle, the disposal, and all other information issues that, you know, in a global case, supply chain officials may be even more small because of the way it's built up. But in the case of the extreme case, it's quite large. So they need, and it kept saying this in the meeting, elevate to another level. It's an important area of work, and it needs to be integrated in all their activities. So that kind of thing. The support and employment of qualified personnel. I think we've seen placements of senior managers without the adequate skills to be able to execute those functions. And hence, the real learning curve is 3, 4, 5 years. As you get the person really skilled, then the person leaves and the new one starts. That's vital in that many municipalities for the operating plans to another. So we've seen that, and we say, let's try and get that support and employment to the right qualification. Improve recruitment. Members, you will see that in recent Soviet articles and in other newspapers, that the competency areas and the guidelines are starting to feature in the adverts that we put out, so that it's already starting to attract the relevant skills. Here I can give you a comedy and example. We put some adverts in the Sunday Times for the post of the This is an example. 300 applications. Of the 300, 290 returned their home. So they don't need the minimum competency level, or the minimum level required. They don't need at least the 1 year experience level. I think they don't need to find role. So people were wanting to get a position, but without the requisite support. Hence the internship program starting to be starting to help us out. The transition provisions that we have in the regulations already by the job have its comments to all municipalities and municipal entities. We say this should be in the municipality itself a proper access in time. Why not if you run at a national or another level? And the municipality needs to know what skill it needs itself and doesn't have. So where is that information? Is it available to that level? So this part one of the transition provision allows for that to happen. The schedule is for that specifically. And roles for the SAQA recognized qualification. Now we've registered a level 5 qualification of financial management in SAQA already. That registration, as you know, every 4 years is exactly reviewed, and that is a very, very good sample. We appointed people now. That's going to be common testing, by the way. People go for a course. They're not going to attend the course, have a nice lunch, and go away. They're going to have to write a test at the end of the course to know that they are pretty competent for the budget matter. So it's changing in the way that current training is happening. A lot of people come for presentation, they're happy. 90% of the time they're on the telephone, or what we found is they reach come at senior management, but they can use them some. And the training actually happens. Repeat the process. So this is going to be something that's going to force people to teach in the last level. I think that's really supports the reason about. The attainment of competence to be included in the performance agreement now. These are the kind of levels that we have in place. The entry of levels, I'm sure the members are aware of these levels, but I won't go into them, but you can see what they are. We ask them that the performance agreements of the senior manager and other officials start to show the levels that they have in terms of the skill. So it becomes now a point where part of the performance agreement for the next year, you need to improve your skill. So the performance on yourself, as an individual as well, should be part of the process of improving your skill. But I think that's another policy. Two slides that you see on page 6 on your handout, we actually give you a practical example of what it is. There is an entry level national qualification framework, level 5. These are unit standards that you see along the line. Entry level 6 is the next level, and you saw in the previous slide what that means. But each of these have an outcome. And if you look at them very carefully, they talk to all the issues in the NFM around the competency of the person. So whether you have a base in competency, you have to have a little more enhancement in certain areas. But you will recognize for, if you have passed a module on, let's say, preparing, analyzing, and financial reports, you are given that training, your competency. Because you're saying this is your base minimum that's required. And we can look at other examples that we go through. The important part that I think also needs to be recognized is we need to ensure that the prior learning of those in the system are taken into account, because you can't buy experience. We found that you come out of university, you ask ready, in our unit of the surgery we have 5 interns training that we're offering an internship for 3 years. Thankfully, 2 of them will be appointed full-time, so that's great improvement. But when they walk into the institution, out of the university, they're not ready for the work environment. So that grooming was really needed. And we're saying, there is experienced people. They don't want to lose the experienced people, so to the extent that we can keep them with the qualities they have. But let's look at how we try to address the prior learning. And that's the system that we have in place. We discuss them, identifying what officials need to know, what they need to do, matching the officials with the skills, and that's got to be part of the institutional work that the Minister of Human Resources Department does. Assess officials against the standards and provide credits for those officials. So that's the learning skills part as well. We talk to the people, they have appointed assessors, and we bring in on new assessors every on a regular basis. But we need more emphasis to be put here, and we need people to come to the party as well. I think it will grow once we become heritage. Now, the guidance may sound complicated, but I'm sure the deal was quite easy. The first step of the country is the regulation, the draft that we have on the table. That sets the provisions that we need to work with. But what it does do is instead, it is complicated for people during the workshop, it doesn't help them out. So we should guide each of the project, and they all lead in some way or the other in financial management. And we workshop those with DPRG, and they consequently agree that the financial start to get people moving in the right direction. Understanding what is required. So do one example. Let's, if we can, let's quickly just remind ourselves to set the qualification for a municipal CFO, Chief Finance Officer, at entry of level 6 in terms of the standards, or at entry of level 7, depending on the different types of section of municipality. To set for the lower level 6, or low capacity, medium, to attract people, to start to grow the system, to get them the budget plans of municipality to focus on. And level 7, this is the metro and the large, I think cities probably with 20 offices that will fall into this category. And we say 4 here. So, of course, in the financial management area, if you look at the big companies in the JSP, the other CAs in the high echelon, if you look at the big budget municipalities, you know, from 15 billion rand to like one municipality, of course, you want somebody with a good skill to be able to do the proper financial advice. And that's the thinking that applies to get up there. Okay, the definition of how we try to get the calculation map, which is total budget. We said include the intent of the municipality and include the value of the municipality. Now, just as an example, the work related experience, we said for the chief finance officer, and by the way, all the guys are talking to the chief finance officer. Dealing with financial management. He says, in the low capacity size municipalities, there's a large number of the massive amount of municipalities for participants. We have 5 years at middle management level, for the some experience. Now, we then also said that the high capacity 7 years at senior management level, middle management level, 2 years. So we try to get a sense that you are part of experience, you need to remove, improve the situation in the municipality, you understand the context, work in the practices, then that's a minimum that is required. So we try to get at least people in place who can address necessary work related function. Then we focus the competency. What members of the would like to just page through very quickly to a guy called Chief Finance Officer. There's a different track on each of them. But one is, if you look at that, you will find what we were talking about is detail in the first presentation. But where it becomes more interesting is trying to start to look at the work-related experience we actually spoke about. But what is so key to that is on the page 6 on it. And there is something that gives, I think, a practical guidance to the human resource department for the minister of nature. This is what you need to know. To be appointed as a CFO, these are your areas of competence. They talk to the minister, and they talk to broader issues of local government, but for the younger person around them, and it's out of field. So I think from 7 onwards, right up to 11, this guy, 13, 17, 18, this guy gives you the need to what now, these human standards again, if you look at the regulation, I'm not trying to intentionally throw people around offline, but you look at the regulation and then you start to look at the competencies for finance officers. If you look at that, you will see that foundation team of the regulation to guide you as well. To see what are the different competency areas. We're saying there's two areas of competency that we need to keep leadership and management. And then so forth. So it does lead to what we are effectively and we put in the standards. People can go to the external website, draw them down. It's a whole stack of information that gives you more meat to what it's about. I think on the same subject matter, the same page 15 of the regulation, if you look at the 11.36.342, it's the second line of financial management. It gives you a sense now on how we direct people that guide people along the way. So may find some good in being that find you there. And it directly means from here, that's the guide, and that's the point. And then, so I hope we're going to work through that context. Specific outcomes in a certain criteria, developed approaches, we're trying to get a sense where the CFO in place does not see only one part of the job, nothing. Part time, let's put it this way, modernizing the financial management field in FMA. Some CFOs only saw their role as doing financial statements. Other CFOs or treasurers saw their role as only collecting revenue. Others saw their role as only managing the expenditure. And there wasn't a sense of a collective that you had to do with it. Prepare a budget. Check that it's improving. Check your revenue. Check your expenditure. There's a whole range of issues that the CFOs are not doing. They're just looking at one part. There's another way to pop up a new dimension. And we need to start to get it. Okay, I think we've spoken through the guide of the competency and the specific requirements. Remember what it works for, another example, we can do that as well. The guide as well, I'll talk through the competency areas. So this direction is straight back to the guide. So slide the CPI into the guide and you get it. Okay. The CFO's knowledge, again, is pretty very broad because there's so much that the CFO has to do effectively to be effective. Because now the person that's going to be dedicated to the responsibilities and things like that. But the scope is now much wider. And I think we all realize that when we lost the FMA and the policymakers, yeah, they could easily. But it's a wide range. We then move on to a broader part where, when we spoke about consultation earlier, what generally we have to summarize is what came across. Of the 6 regional workshops, over 500 people or 10. Now, I think it was a 2-day session, by the way, where we went through a 4 hours worth of practical examples of this regulation, the guide, the presentation. The second part of the 2-day session was to get the mentors that we had in the municipality, our 500%. That's a different point. To come to the meeting and workshop this on how the mentors have to operate and how the interns operate and rotate within the organization. So that's the kind of detailed work that we're doing in the 2 days. So I think that communication strategy then proves largely successful to the kind of comments we saw coming in. The regulation in many areas, some other senior officials an engineer that came past and said, but I'm working in the water sector, but now I need something like this for the water. So we said, okay, this is financial management related course. Let us talk to GPRG, let us talk to UOC, let us talk to others that will now know more about the water sector and try to set minimum frame if that is what you want. So those are some comments that came out. Other comments that came to say, you know, why can't we have a higher level of the supply chain officials? So obviously not at the level 5. Although we have a smaller municipality, there's so much to be done on tendering, on procurement, on reviewing, and so on. Ensure that it's done appropriately. Put us at level 6, we want to aspire to achieve that. That's another comment that came through. Bigger comments came through on what support we can give a municipality. Can we go to the CETA and knock on the door? We said, okay. So we spoke to the local government CETA. We have a relationship with them now that the universities, when they offer the courses, part of the funding will be funded through the CETA as well. So there's at least some assistance coming from there. The other part will be funded from the financial management grant that we issue. There's some role in this coalition. Currently we've been running supply chain workshops. And the supply chain to be more effectively done in plans for the subsidy approach we go to develop for that. And other resources and rollouts can we explore. One or two comments came back and already said, can we give an exemption? What is the point of this? It's really an actor that they want an exemption. And we can now lead them for that. Motivate why you say you want an exemption. And lead them for that. So there's so many capacity that are there's the validity that now we want to be exempted. But it's a challenge one to look at. But I think this is the kind of big issue that comes to this conversation course so far. And then lastly, let's just move quickly on the monitoring and support. In the regulations, we're also saying that municipal manager and CFO are responsible to monitor to ensure compliance. So responsible to compliance. So they should have quite yearly compliance support, so one at 30th June, which is the end of the financial year, and one mid-year, and use the schedule that you see in the regulations to support them. This can be expanded by anyone in a minute that is on page 26 of the regulation. Where you take a very simple table, if you like, please use this and publish it in the annual report as well, because there's a coincidence on the timeline. So we're saying, this is your report, take the same thing, publish in the annual report, you know what competition you have. And everyone in the public sector will also know. So researchers wanting to get a better understanding will have a trigger. So they're something here. Then, in order to monitor this thing, we're working with the national and provincial government departments to ensure that they build around this and put programs of support in place as we set the real security. Absolutely. So this is the time that we have that flow through. We have already available information. And there's that to include information for all entities. I think that the last policy, in fact, we did a research on the MFMA. The first research showed 120 odd entities. Now down to about 70, 91 municipal entities. And you never know there were so many municipal entities before. From a website as well, which is so we've done the work around that as well. But just to move on, we then look at the type of monitoring, an example that will show employment, those that are under one assessment, performance agreements are in place in terms of the competency attained, and whether they're reaching the competency level. So if you look at the intention of having the effective date 1st of July, fully operational on the 1st of January 2013. So there is a phasing of 5.5 years to get to that stage. And in the reporting requirements, that is going to be required sooner. So one can gauge from now to then that the municipality in its own areas are making progress toward the thing. And that's a very important thing you want to stick on both the members and both of it. Why the municipality is not doing something which come for 5.5 years. So I think that's the way that we can say that. I think the comments were very positive about this. The audience of people in the municipality regarded this as a very positive side, not just get people all on the wrong side of getting them in competency, but pushing them towards achieving it over the few years. Then there's a guide that we've given the municipal managers to say, you know, get a steering committee, you can't do it alone. Co-opt your HR resource manager to be part of the process, do the assessment, identify the gaps, and look at the sequence to do the accreditation of these assessments, and prepare training strategy and budget from now to achieve what you have to achieve by then. So you can help them get ahead of the time. Staff to undertake structural recognized training, and we don't want them to apply that nice training to start their course. Money making speed is not for too long. So we're saying, go for the test and write the test. Pass it, you are accepted, you are competent, then you should be done. Performance agreements must incorporate attainment of competency. So another measure to get people to now perform better. Okay? And recruitment procedures to recruit new competency. This as a members that may not be aware, there's a helpline in the Ministry dealing with the MFNA implementation. There's a website where there's a Q&A question and answer being posted in response to every municipality goes out. There's a issuance of circulars, we should put two circulars now on the website, guiding municipalities on budget reform, accounting related stuff, finance, supply chain, and everything else. Review training materials, we have to ask training providers, including the universities, to submit their materials to us. And lastly, the policy is not good. So we have to review quite a lot of the support materials, and we've done that. And then we've engaged service providers that with the business school. They're now running around the country doing proper 1 week training. There's been a pilot testing that we need managers and CFOs at Caltech. They're now rolling things out. I think it's 12 different standards they're offering. And 3 to 3 different standards on University of Technology. We've spoken to the Nelson Mandela University, the Free State, Stellenbosch, Limpopo, Northwest. Wherever we went, we called the universities to us and we said, join us in this. And there's some very big problems. More will come on board, so we're regionalizing this thing across the country. It won't be just in the big center. So that will help. The MFLA internship program, the 500 interns appointed in municipalities, we have their names, ID numbers, where they're working, how long they're working there, what progression they are doing, we have that. At the moment, we partly came from it from the financial management grant. And they all graduate largely from the previous year of the Advantage community, from the jurisdiction. So municipalities don't apply from outside the area, try and find from within, so you can keep them. In a better position. It's now running for 3.5 years, almost 4 years that program. It's fully effective. So there's about 87 or 88 people in a funded country now. MFMA Foundation Tech and DVD, I'm sure members will have seen it. If they haven't, we'll send you another box full. There are modules that we've done, 6 modules DVD interactive on the implementation of the MFMA. It's a user-friendly module. Somebody will may have seen it here. Mawad, everyone is taking here. Alright, we'll definitely send you boxes back. It can be loaded on your computer and at your leisure work through 6 modules. I think you'll find that for the initial learner and those that want to get on board for that understanding. And of course the workshops and seminars. Alright, I think we've spoken about the service providers and the issues around the platform qualification type approach, the validation of training courses, we set up a validation committee in the treasury to look at the quality of stuff. And we're posting on the website the results for that material as we're going along. Anyone wants to visit the treasury website? I checked last, I think there were 69,000 people on the website. The MFMA website, 69 or 50,000 people. And the members there would like to be one of them in the country. Thank you. That's it.
Thank you. the way forward, say those who come in, and also those who wish to move up, that is where you scale. But if you don't move, and you haven't been scaled on the informal manager, you're simply staying there, or in what you're in some kind of compliance to make oneself more competent. Is there anything within the regulations doing that? The other thing here is talk of 5 and 7 years. Now, on the one hand, I really do believe that chairs come cheaper. But what we're looking at is different NSMA. How long have things in operation? 7 years? Is it 5 years? How long is the new local government legislation being in place? 7 years, 5 years, that kind of thing. And exactly what kind of person are you looking for that we talk about 5 and 7 year experience? Although I must say, I do think experience is important, but I think a challenge is immediately, not in 3 years' time. The other thing is the monitoring and support is my final question, Chairperson, at the moment. On monitoring and support, we spoke about utilization of schedules, using supporting schedules. Now, I'm not sure where you're going to be finding the supporting schedules.
The end of the day, I think that it's a good thing, right?
getting that to take place. But it's just going to be with a decision maker. This is the issue here. They were put down by law and through the MFMA are accountable for whatever is to be happening in terms of administrative process, documenting it. But they are there to implement a policy. And the policy is played here for you in the ANC policy. Okay, now, the ANC counselor, therefore, often necessary to mark and set and lead to those directives and laws. In this instance, a number of these officials, they literally refuse and resist implement that policy. It's a fact, it's a bottom line. Now, the target that we are then posing to this new policy is an official who refuses to implement that policy against an ANC counselor who is supposed to be ensuring that these policies are implemented. Now, those are the counselors who can't be answered for the material. Last one here, which is the on supply statement. I'm not sure how to raise it, but I'm sure you'll find a way of answering. The issue for me here is more about the supply chain management, the implementation power. I'm very keen to understand the vision. I have a follow-up question which I will raise to answer. The vision of that, especially with regard to the problem.
We need the 5 years and experience, and of which at the moment we don't have people who are doing the job or who work for the certain qualifications that we are looking for at the moment, like contracting and so forth. And what will happen in cases where political tensions exist between political parties, you know, because one party is taking over in one state, another one country, and dismisses the officials where for the qualifications, irrespective of whether it's a contract or not, or whether it's in those cases. And some changes within the question of the question, for example, it's that the AC is a changing context in the other. If you go by the whole thing, it seems a lot of officials, it could be new officers at that point. I think the challenge that we want to face in such issues. And also to make consideration what coming back yesterday. Yes, is the ANC doing anything perhaps to empower candidates themselves? Are there any courses that can be put in place so that the for example, get the candidates empowered so that they exist, you know, what entails if they take office at this anyway, you know what administration or implications that might be that, you know, legacy is the initial activity. And also, you know, there are about the numbers, you know, especially the strategic issue and the case, and of which the funded are, you know, so called colors, the number 1,000, that's a couple of numbers, the TA, so special strategies, out of 7,000 that are in this country. And each time I think that they are really qualified, they are paid by the family system. Now, if you say you need a legal CA in that age level itself, I'm just thinking how many CAs would be set to go to the family system.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think we have a very valuable input and comment that you really have shaped an amendment in that going forward. I think the main issue that that Chairman raised was about what is currently in place, take the arrangement of this. To my knowledge, there isn't much in place. So, if you refer, if the rates are not in place, what then is in place? But the only thing that we have is the current regulation that the Minister of the DRG issued on the performance plan. But that is not talking to the company. So there is no other regulation that we are aware of that affects the municipal management. And key officials in the government and the minimum qualification. I'm not aware of it. You would have, and using more research, you would have found it. But it's not there. So maybe that accident has to be filled. And we're saying, yes, maybe an attempt to put it back on the street. But that is perfectly plausible, dealing with all issues or not, dealing with the problem. And I think I want to maybe just link on that to the other members' point about whether we're creating legislation that is enabling or whether there's proposing measures. We, thankfully, we're using the same draft as the draft of the Systems Act, constructed as the amendment to draft the regulation. And one of the key points in that, on the most day, was 100% sure that we're trying as much as possible to not to extend the bounds of becoming enabling, but rather to be effective what the intent is here. So I think that's why we have a slide that deals specifically with Section 3.1 that talks to where these provisions are coming from, to be able to support the regulation. So that's something that we need to look at. So yes, when we feel that we're extending the bounds, let us look at that and ask the legal advocate again why that is okay to us and why it's good for us. There's no way that we want to put in place something that is enabling. We don't have the policy that you have. So I think we respect the power that you have. And, you know, we want to engage with you on these issues. So I think it's important. We do not yet say any of this is going to be an enabling position. Okay, maybe setting new ground, it may be setting new terrain, but it's drawn from the section 83, 107 and 119 from the NSMA, from specifically from those services, which talk about putting competency, minimum competency together, describing the minimum competency together, box to that in the NSMA. So, fiction in a slight case, three of the slides. Page 3 on the slide. So I think that was also hopefully the challenge of the issue that may surface. The member raised an issue around the capacity, the 5 years and beyond, and how can we get there. The regulation is drafted in a way that it's not saying you must be 5 years in a municipality. So you could have 5 years experience in a private sector organization and have it for that. So we say before, remember it was written, the kind of practice before was you would be in that institution and you would have to grow the institution. No, the cross-pollination skills must bring in the new skills as well. It's not only coaching by the private sector, we want private sector to come to the party as well. And maybe some of these individuals will come through. So it's that kind of thing that's important to understand. We did not say you must have 5 years in government to be here. You can be outside government as well. So that's recognized. But of course there's a challenge with implementation of the 5 years here. You deal with it. The issue, I think, about the regulation of the first few years, it is applicable to broader limited people as well. The point of was around the times that I made this understanding. What is done for reducing the birth rate people up? We say if we put in the schedule we talked about on page 26, we said if you do every 6 months as a municipality, update that, produce it to your council, more importantly, go to the municipal council as well, and publish it in the annual report. We then say that that will give you an opportunity to measure not all, in fact, going down, but actually the regulation, page 26 raised there. We can do for other finance officials as well. It's not restricted only to the senior group, but the middle management as well. We talked about middle management structure. So we think we can grow more the challenge for the senior position, especially that for the other member, for those that are not wanting to embrace labor relations that can I end. But I think we drafted something there, perhaps in a way that would get people to move in the right direction. Without the absolute public role, without being in place, how do people strive to find the shift the challenges to get there? I think fiction put senior team for the member that's really good issue around what happens to below municipal managers, managing their skills, others, and stuff like that. If you look at section quickly, it talks about the 5 years, but it also existing financial supply chain officials not meeting minimum competency level. It says, do not affect the continued employment conditions, financial supply chain officials appointed to municipality, but what we try to do is promote a sense that let's try and do not go for some motion to try and improve the also section 16, a payment of computer within prescribed time frame. I think those who in some ways sign is just that the members want to accept them, but it's legal and that's perfect. But I think the issues there for us because you know other people in the presentation, they think they are like, so we can handle that. Experience, I think, we've already said, my challenges, the schedule, in the member okay, the youth offending or something, I think a very valid point. You know, when we start to even draft regulation, we said, I think it's like the other youth is like, at least not too well, so that I wouldn't complicate the system. When we went to the workshop and we did the practical examples, we did for all of us, we found that the officials were very effective. So we believe that we trained over 500 people in different municipalities that would be able to take the form. Just that the awareness rate, let's call it awareness rate. I'm not sure what the energy can get to be able to say that they fully understand it. So I think we've done that two-day workshop, six regional workshops around the country, over 500, one of the slides talking about it, they're there. We have 528 people that attended. We had a signature on so that kind of very comfortable. We had it more on an interactive rather than a full session, because that's the thing that we interacted with them. Now let us see, we found it, so we go through them, we work through it, we guide them. But if that 500 can expand it, great, and share it as well. And there were all municipalities working on it. And there were senior levels, there were also the interns that came along in special meetings. So I think we try our best to share. We can't say for sure that everyone was aware of this. There were officials of different levels, there were provincial officials. There were a few councillors that attended. late in the day we found out councillor servant in the room, yes, there were a few councillors for sure. We discussed this with Sarga as well, to try and see how much further they can share their knowledge around. And I think as a treasury, we're willing and able and we want to support wherever we can. So if this, and then the request comes from Sarga, do something we will have. Just to give you an example, the induction program and the new councillors came on board. We issued this to every councillor. The front page is for the notes of this to say, councillor, please write your name on it so it becomes your property. We issued this to every councillor around the country via the mayor's speaker's offices and municipality. But if councillors don't have it, they need to really lift the balls down. Somebody's got to knock away somewhere. But we just did over 12,000 copies of this in our form. Wow. So I think that we push that. Also, the Plaza by participating in the workshop. In fact, in Northwest, we've done even more work there than in other areas that we've gone regionally with the council. So we support that we put in place. And we work with Plaza. So when there's more, I think we're willing to participate. What we just find though, in the Portion Council, change, unfortunately, is that when people get appointed as consultants to go and present to council, they do not know the subject matter as well. And they do often present the wrong stuff. When we've seen that, the comments start off all that and they said, you need our help, we will come. We will come there and help you create the workshops. So I think members, if you can really take that forward as well, wherever you are, that really helps us to get the right message. We have a register of all the people that can commit to the commission. So we do know that we try to be effective. So in the 2 months open period we have 2 months period for comments. We have official funding. We try to address as much as we could on the council of comments. In terms of the PSMA, the member, I'm not sure whether there was inconsistency with part of the PSMA and other legislation, but I think, because the PSMA was in 1999, this was 2003, effective 2004. Much of the work, I think, that has been learned from that experience and vice versa. So there's a learning from both sides to improve. We do work together with our colleagues that manage the PSMA. We do within treasury as well as outside. We consult with all the regulations before we even get put on paper. So the process of unfolding there is important as well. To know. So any other contacts in the group with I think the other members comment I agree with the system. It's important that we do recommend by them. So one of the provisions here also brings on board guidance as well, talking about by them. So that recognition will come through. But of course the measurement of performance contract, measurement of competency level in the municipality locally is the challenge. I think there's a practical example of how to deal with this and how in some way it would be good to strengthen some of these guys to actually bring it in there and say, if you give an example, this is what we'd like to put in there. I think that would be nice to really help the officials out there and the customers as well. So, remember, we would welcome that you put this in the night to do something about that. We would really like to accommodate an example. Imposed regulations on implementing the region. I think because of the vacuum already, some may say it's imposed. We say we just give effect to what the only recommended year wanted in the first place to ensure that there's minimum compliance. Not like, and remember the 1108, we said in one of the slides that if you go level 7 and CA, we say not really municipality needs to attend the CA. If it is at the top level, those 500 million budget beyond the large amount of funds from the need people with high situation in the bank. And if you look at it carefully, there's probably about 33 municipalities that fall within that category. So the word is actually in the regulation on page 15 is all, not and. Those levels at least in terms of level 7, all appear for those above 500. I think that helps. The basic is the growth from that. So we hope in general to take the 1,100 and all the shades. And we try to at least give an opportunity for some cost collaboration. We need to be in the local the kind of company is the way that we come in. We need further so that we do need to know economy. We need other people to be pushing skills. Not the way that we practice in the past. The one I'm saying in terms of how the law is being implemented, so remember knowledge that we issued a guide circular which asks for the SCDIP, which is service delivery and budget implementation plan, which was member figure to the next. We're saying, if that is done properly, within 30 days of the budget being adopted, you can manage the performance of council over the official in certain ways that you couldn't do before. And we also went further to say, provide that SDBIP with information at a ward level. That actually said, give that information, let that senior manager know what they use contract, when the project must start the ward. Because of what comes with them is empowered by that information. So there's a circular and a guide on that I've already done. We can share more information at a later point, so members want to see that. We can help see how we can share some ideas on this. But we try to show you service delivery by the different information plan with CDS. The other important thing is around how we implement the issues on supply chain. There's a lot of change needed, but on supply chain. There was over 1,200 officials trained in supply chain throughout the country over the last year and a half. Through the funding process and other detailed implementation. The challenge is not over. We know this. It's clear that I think a lot of officials will have still do further work. So as well, what we've helped in doing here, we've issued a draft template of the supply chain management policy for the municipalities and the other councils to look at it, review it, and adopt it in a way that they would like. Somewhere, and we've circulated to all the mayors already. Last year, when we issued the regulation, we issued the policy guidance for it. Then we said, here's the support measure. You do this in the municipality as you like, tweak it, amend it, suit yourself. So that's on the website already on the platform. And we want another copy of that. In fact, it was all the stuff we had, we have three volumes of files. The research for somebody to follow the website and get your hard copy and add it in the office if you like. It would be nice to actually do that. So that's the support issue. I think so many shippers are in addition to the most of them. I'm not sure we have all the handbook. We have a very standard Thank you. So I think we should, my bad question that we have to prove it, the question coming from the community. I think this issue is something that is changing in the community, whereby we had a concern where there are so many providers, and extent that we requested that they come up with this. Because we questioned that, you know, the outcome in terms of people being exposed. So many hours of training, but the rest concerns what we have. My other point is that so far that question leads to a suggestion. Also the inclusion of auditor general, because the competency level in terms of this area, as well as within the project consolidate the deployment of those experts. I am not sure if also they are pleased in terms of understanding exactly what should like to go. There's a concern suggestion that we have so many experts coming with their own things from different angles. And this is quite academic stuff, very ordinary. Those questions were simply an expression of concern in terms of the quality. So my real suggestion, and I'm hearing that all of the members here raised the salary issue, because I think you have to sit on SALDA above all, because it's the SALDA who has to make sure that there is no training that is accessed from unqualified people beyond the concept. The other one is the question really of how you roll out the program. Government has got this challenge of coaching people living on first department, vacancy level, you have seen as a challenge across all departments. I'm not sure as to how you're going to manage this in terms of training and incentives for people to rather stay in the department than be jumping there. Thank you.
Okay, you mentioned the GDP, that the initial accredited that would provide a stable and the best case that they can use now is the same way of creating the
government. Chairperson, we're working towards getting that list populated well. At the moment, we have three people on that list. The first is a school that we use the material. And I think the struggle of 13 units that is the capacity offering. We have the application that has done two or three of the models partly on the CSMA, but then adapted to the MSMA requirements, planning and legal frameworks and other stuff. And we're working now with other universities to get a further spread throughout the region. We've spoken to all of them. We had a one-day school workshop with them because we want to go there as a kind of curriculum support program. Already, and waiting for more to come through. We're trying to put, as the new names come up, we will put on more. So there's a website, area on the website under the MSMA that has some information there at the moment, but we need to grow that to be more accessible to our position. The other big area is that we need to find space for Sandy. We're meeting with them again after to see what they can offer in terms of the different areas. So they're very keen to get into the Minister of Finance training, or with the security and control of the city, they can see the region of work like it is on the supply chain as well. So there's also good options, opportunities. We're linking up with SALGA, honestly, and with the local government speaker, so that it's just a collective. It can be done by one of the small we have collected for that. Parts talk to each other, especially there's definitely overlaps between the system bank, the MSMA, and the people. So we're working with our department, BPLG, as well to make it a more coherent kind of response to the government.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah, next step is to the question. Thank you.
also would be able to sort of have the evidence that we certain members of the Protocol Committee of the Programme also would be able to present the compartments to help you with our services to the compartments of the expected by the you are assuming that the data is all about. Thank you very much. Take a 10-minute break and the chair needed to take back.
It's okay, don't worry.
Because we want to
make sure that it stays in the PAC net. So the rule we said is, general matter, all of your shareholders have to be taxable shareholders. But we had a little rule that said, we'll tolerate tax-exempt shareholders if they own 5% or less. The reason why we had the 5% less rule was a rule of administrative convenience, because you can't look at all your minor shareholders. If you have one minor shareholder, only 0.001 is exempt, what are you going to do? You're going to destroy the whole reorganization. So it holds the company hostage. So we put in a rule that says if you have you're allowed to have exempt shareholders up to 5%, basically, per shareholder. Well, one of the areas that came up before was pension funds. Now, pension funds, under old law, were exempt from income tax, but they were subject to tax on retirement funds. So they were viewed as taxable persons. Well, that was fine. So if you had a large pension fund owning a company, you as a company could do your endowment because your pension shareholders are like anybody else. Well, we've appealed the tax on retirement funds. So suddenly, the pension fund became completely exempt, and due to a technical reason, all of a sudden, if you were a listed company and you had a large pension fund, you couldn't do any endowments anymore. This one of these went on the scratches, didn't it? And we were aware of the problem, but we weren't aware of the solution at the time. And unfortunately, time ran against us, and we just said, okay, well, let's see what happens. We hope we can hold it out a few months. And lo and behold, the company, I won't name which, was planning on doing unbundling, and they found that they had a large pension fund. And they said, wait a minute, we can't reorganize our operations because we have a large pension shareholder here, just because of the technical wording of the statute? Surely this cannot be right. We must have been crazy when we did this. And unfortunately, I said, well, we were aware of what was going on, but we had to be a time running against us. So we were sympathetic to the request fairly quickly on this. We took a look at this issue of pension funds, because pension funds are now wholly exempt persons. And what we've done is, basically, when you look at a privately held pension fund, they're not allowed to hold more than 15% of any company. The rules on governing pension funds are a little less clear, but it seems that they top around 20%. So what we've done is we basically said you can do an unbundling as long as you don't have an exempt shareholder more than 20%. That way, if you have a pension fund, you're fine. And then we also put in a connected person test so you don't post the date of us. The thing that we're very concerned about is this. An unbundling is really a disguised dividend. And we don't want exempt shareholders to come in, strip out through unbundling, and then strip themselves of SGC, get a hold of the company directly, and then sell them tax-free. So we're really worried about those controlling situations. And we said, we believe the 20% test should work, as long as we take into account the latest partners. And so that is, I think, the solution that works for pension funds, and hopefully that should be the end of the matter. But let's hopefully we don't have to watch this space. I think we're okay. And that's on page 8. Sorry about that. Page 1 is withholding for some partners.
At the bottom of page 8, and then over to page 9, you'll recall that last year we made some concessions with restricted businesses, companies and businesses. The question was then raised, why aren't we doing the same for the contractors? And that was agreed, and those changes were made. Something has requested that you backdate those changes since last year. Now, the problem here is, pension earnings deducted in the monthly bank. And last year, it's closed, and employers had to pay it over to it, and they had to do reconciliation. So, undoing all of the bank for what is effectively a one-month backdate doesn't make a lot of sense. So we've regretfully declined that suggestion and said that we will take it from the 1st of March of this year, which is when the personal income tax begins, and it makes sense. Now, that is still some backdating, but to the extent that there's been an over-withholding, the employer still has the opportunity to make an adjustment before the debt is closed pre-acting. With respect to the value added tax, not much to say here. Thank you. understanding as to how you get to the turnover basis of apportionment in CAT. There's a fear that we're taking it away, the answer is no, we're not. So we don't need to go much further in that respect. And then one of the proposals was that where you have a VAT refund scheme, but you also owe us tax returns, we can hold on to the VAT refund until such time as you give us those tax returns. Now, that's been criticized on the basis that, you know, VAT is very cash flow dependent. You need that money as quickly as you can. Balanced against that, of course, is the fact that you may very well have a liability sitting in those outstanding returns. And that money that we should be collecting from you is impacting on your cash flow anyway. So there are competing considerations here. But the fact of the matter is that we would be not maintaining consistency across tax types if we introduced this for VAT and not elsewhere. And so we're currently withdrawing that amendment so that we can look at it a bit more carefully going forward.
Stamp duty on leases is a nice simple issue. See, whenever you get a lease, you get a stamp duty. It's not a large amount. And we wanted to limit it to long-term leases because basically short-term leases become very inconvenient and administratively not workable. And the only thing we're really concerned about is that if you buy and sell real property, it's subject to transfer fee. So if you don't put a stamp duty on long-term leases, everybody just says, well, I'm not going to buy and sell, I'll just do a 100-year lease, and therefore I can avoid the transfer duty and the stamp duty. So what we did is we put an exemption, and we said, when it comes to stamp duty, that you don't have to worry about leases less than 5 years. I think we always intended it to be 5 years or less, but due to the drafting wording problem, it's the less than 5 years. So the industry came back and said, okay, in order to avoid the stamp duty, you have to take 4 years, 11 months, and 29 days. That's administratively cumbersome. And so we proceeded and said, no, we've always intended 5 years or less, and so there we go on that. And then there's also an issue around the effective date. We hoped originally to push for a 1 March effective date, but I think we were a little unrealistic there because the legislation had not yet been released. The stamp duty is one that you pay as you go. So it's not an assessment year period. So since we're still hanging with the bill, we've got to wait until June. So I think at that point it should be ready.
Although we're not getting the bill formally adopted until July, but I think we're okay on June.
And so that's fair enough.
Okay, there's an issue with respect to the custom. You'll recall that every year Parliament ratifies the tariff amendments that were made in the previous year. We've been requested to exclude one particular tariff amendment because it's the subject of a legal dispute currently. I see at the moment we're saying the response is accepted. I think at this point we think we'll be accepting that as a proposal, but we're still taking some advice as to the implications of that. So that's the current situation on that. Page 10 and 11. There was one of the key submissions last time around was the question of what do we do with the risk of tax and retirement funds now that the super fuel? Because the risk exists that we have items that have had a district raise that are currently under dispute that could drag on for extended periods of time. And then there's a question of what are we going to do about audits going back into the past and issues that have been picked up in audit but haven't been assessed yet, because this also has the potential for dragging on for extended periods of time. Now, we're sympathetic to those concerns. I don't think anybody wants to be here worrying about the tax on retirement funds 6 or 7 years from now. So what we've looked at here, though, is that we still need to get a full handle on it. We've had some very useful engagements with the industry as to what is all in this pot of issues. Because a pot of issues are interpretation issues, there are calculational problems on their side and on ours, there are some systemic issues again on their side and on ours. And so we need to be able to properly evaluate what we're saying yes to if we say yes. So we've taken the following approach to this, or at least we're proposing the following approach, that with respect to assessments that have already been raised, as was requested, we incorporate the settlement provisions that are available for all the other acts into the so that we are in a position to reach a reasonable settlement with respect to current disputes. With respect to the other issues, we would like to defer that one over until the retirement of the original amendment bill and use the space between now and then to get a proper handle on exactly what is there, so that we can render informed recommendations both to the minister and to the commission on with respect to what the best way forward is on that.
Thank you. See, here is one of the big issues there, okay, the lump sum payments on retirement debt. And it's discussed when we reported back to the committee, when you change the system of lump sum, the old system of the complex formulas, has been eliminated and we've gone to a much more straightforward system. And we said basically the lump sum effectively operates the standalone system. So that when you get a lump sum on retirement, the first $300,000 will be exempt, the next $600,000 will be subject to 18%, and the next amount of $600,000 will be subject to 36%. And the issue that's raised by a few people, what if I put in a non-deductible contribution? Well, if you put in a non-deductible contribution, that will also be exempt and not be part of the system that's been raised on the basis here. This is a summary of the basic table of what's issue. There are a few comments that we've gotten with a few examples where they said, look, you put in a system that is not as favorable as the old system. Now, the concept here is we wanted to have a system that helped out low-income and middle-income people who would stay for a long period of time. What we were trying to terminate was some of the avoidance schemes that were being used by the upper end. So the people who suddenly, 2 years before their retirement, would no longer receive a salary, but would receive preference dividends that were exempt from tax. And those are the things that we weren't very sympathetic with. So we threw a few examples, and it seems that we might be a little unfair to some low-income and middle-income, but some of the suggestions seem to end up helping the higher income more. So what we are trying to do is take a look to deal with the situation. And the biggest issue of concern to us is the Provident Fund, because the calculations we made were more based on the pension fund, which only allowed a one-third withdrawal. Provident funds allow 100% withdrawal, which is also a bit of an issue, but we believe that it's more of a regulatory one. And so the calculations might be in the worst off condition that we were trying to help. So there, we've still got to do some calculation work, and we'll have to come back to you when we report back the final round on this one. But we need the minister's approval on this one. But I think, again, it's trying to get the right balance there, and we're fairly sympathetic to that change. Now, some of the other issues here, and that's on the bottom of page 11 and turning over to page 12. The other issues that are involved, and you're going to see some of the problems that we're having in tax now, is that the tax system, the pension system, is very closely linked on a number of issues. And what the ministry has tried to do is to try to, you know, reform the pension system. Maybe kind of reform the pension system a little, you have another little tax adjustment going on. So these issues get very hard. That's one of the things that we had a problem with as the lump sum. We had hoped to come to the committee early in March with the lump sum issue in hand. And unfortunately, it took a little longer because we needed to make sure the regulatory side worked out. One of the issues that remains open on the table is that we've only covered retirement withdrawal on lump sum and debt withdrawal. But let's say you're 40 and you lose your job. The old law continues, which is the old averaging formula and a different form of exemption. And some of the commentators said, why haven't you addressed those issues? Normally, I don't keep those in the response document until they have addressed it. So, but I think it's so related, I thought I needed to mention it. But the problem here is on the regulatory side. You see, when you're looking at retirement and debt, we know that we want a certain amount of lump sum to come out so you can handle your debt, maybe start a small business. You need some flexibility with your money. And it's a difficult balance. Even there, you want to make sure that people don't spend that one-third or so on vacation. The problem is, before retirement, we raise a whole set of other issues. And that is, one of the leakages in the retirement system is that people will quit their job, And they said, oh gee, well, it's my pension fund. It's such a fun place to stay. I know that I had a friend in the U.S. He's been living off his pension at age 40 for the last 2-3 years. And so they suddenly put themselves in a position where they waste the money and they're not ready for retirement. And there's questions whether you do that as a regulation, do you lose it as a tax? I mean, how do we exactly deal with this point? And so at the moment we've left it out, and hopefully we can get to it in September, because we're still discussing the issue. But it means that we have a very different system, which is not exactly a system, but a little bit more by happenstance right now than by deliberate design. And so we need to straighten that out and recognize the need, but we want to make sure that we have the right solution, not just that a quick, let's make the two systems match, and the policy is very different there. So that one, I say, Washington State, and hopefully in September, depending on where we come out of the regulation, we're really being held up on that one. Then there's some smaller issues as I wrap up here, and that is the ministry has already made a number of regulatory changes in order to stop a number of problematic practices. So what you've seen, and that's the bottom of page 12, is that the first thing we had around 2001-2002 was employers who were keeping the employee contributions for themselves were forced to pay over those employee contributions. And so, all of a sudden, employers were required to make a number of payouts. We also had a recent statement of intent between the insurance industry and the minister saying, when it comes to these penalties for early withdrawal or early termination, you do not want excessive penalties. So there is a deal with the industry to pay back some of those penalties and so forth. And yet there's a third thing that has begun to emerge, which is dealing with bulging of insurance. You're secretly getting the benefit of insurance and you're not sharing that as well. But each time one of these things come out, sometimes you have to go in the past and give a compensated payment. And therefore, you need another tax change because do you want that to be taxable or not taxable? Under what circumstances? The area you think is very, very esoteric. And so some of these issues are trying to accommodate these one-off payments, basically. Now, what you have here is that we were trying to cover bulging of insurance. That was the most recent problem. That if you had to make a payout because of the prior bulging, we wanted to hear an exemption. We initially had an exemption, but then because of the drafting issue, we dropped the exemption. And so they said, why did you drop the exemption? And the answer is, because of, and the exemption is stored. And basically what we're saying is, with a lot of these small one-off payments, let's not pass that. And the theory is this. That even if you're going to get your money back, you're not made whole. So even if the statement is intent, you only get maybe 70% of your income or 60% of what you put in. You did really profit. I know that you added tax incentives there a little bit, but by the time the game is done, let's just make sure, we know you're not made whole here, and so tax system is set aside. And then it's a little bit of a compromised tax principle, but, let's try to help out some set of circumstances, and that's how we take it in there. There are some issues around distribution between former members and members. We say that if you're no longer a member, you get a payment, the exemption. But if you're currently a member of the fund, and we add that money back into your fund, we don't get a special exemption. Now what happens is, when it goes into your fund, there's two people. There's the guy, he's had it with the system, and he's got nothing, and he's just giving cash. And then there's the other guy, he's got a pension fund, or a retirement fund of some kind, and you're giving and adding for current one. We're saying the guy who's outside the system is given out by exemption. The guy who's currently in the system, when you add it to his pension fund, well, that's just automatically exempt at that stage. What some people are saying is, well, why can't that exemption carry over when I make a later withdrawal? So they kind of have that power issue. Well, the first issue is administratively. Remember, when you got a surplus one 20 years ago, how are we going to calculate that? But the second issue is that when we're really trying to compensate a former member, because the former members are only getting such a small amount that if they try to put it into some sort of retirement vehicle, the administrative cost is so high that it will eat up any benefit. Once you have a fund, those administrative costs are already taken care of. So there are really two sets of different taxpayers here, and that's why we've left the exemption to only one group, because we're really trying to help out the people who can't utilize the pension fund. And again, even the people in the fund will only be taxed way later on. And so the difference is not as great as all of that. And then there are issues around effective dates, about tax-free surpluses. And that's the effective date. We put one March 2007 effective date, we're moving back to 2006. But just to say briefly, there are a number of problems with effective dates. You'll see us playing around. We're often trying to accommodate, you know, retroactive agreements. And then the insurance companies have to pay this out, and we're trying to make sure whatever they do, we go back to that date, and so we leave them out of the system. And sometimes their systems change, and the tax system has to change again. So all we're doing is thinking of accommodating changes. And on that note, we are done. And then we're going to have to go.
Sure, I mean, I have to, would you mind to do that now or ask questions on the first document?
Take questions on the first document. And today, a number of those that you said the children come as well.
Because there was a comment made
complicated quantum binding. You think that the president and the government is taking in India,
But hence the request that we be afforded a bit more time to do that, to actually go and do it. And that is again where we have some reasons for interaction with the industry. Then of course you have things that are simple calculation errors. Somebody's made a mistake in the return. Okay, they sort of added up the column wrong and instead of paying us, you know, $1 million, they paid us $800,000. That is something that's just wrong and you should clear. And then there are issues around interest calculations and stuff in our system that we would also like to just check, you know, how big are those issues that need to be resolved. And to come up after all of that to the sort of response to your question, we would want to do that by the time of the reading for the second book. So, at the end of the
chapter. Okay, abundance. First, Mr. Mooney did a job on pension 15%, and Mr. Johnson Dixon is doing his job. Congratulations. You're absolutely right. Private pensions are limited to 15%. So why the heck did we use 20? The private pensions are clearly limited to 15, and I believe the collective investment schemes are limited to 10% shareholders. And that's important because you want to make sure that these funds are diversified. The issue is that when you look at the government pension fund, it's not subject to the Pension Act. I don't know the politics around that. The government pension fund is not subject to the Pension Act. I think it works on that one. I'm not correct on that, I think. They're different systems. And they have their own set of regulations. And so sometimes that comes up. And I'm not sure. There's a number of politics around that that I'm not fully aware of. But the point is that's the rule. There are restrictions around that that operate a little differently. The point is that there is no cap currently on the government pension fund, and sometimes the government pension fund owns a significant amount of our company. You don't want to say, well, now you got a government pension fund, well, then that's bad, but the private pension fund is okay, puts us in a funny position. But having looked at the number, the government pension fund typically maxes out around 20%. And I think one of the things that we have to think about, and I think there is some work that's being done, is should there be a ceiling? But I leave that to the government pension fund people, and I know there's some discussion around that, but so we couldn't leave it to that, and in life we wish it was easier, but it never is. So that's that answer. The other one that you've asked about is, again, what's an unbundling of dividend stuff? But basically, an unbundling, what happens is you have a parent company and a subsidiary, and the parent company owns all the shares. What it does is basically says to the shareholders, you know something, I don't want the subsidiary anymore. Shareholders, please have a subsidiary. So it's giving the shares of the subsidiary to the shareholders. And when you give shares, it's like getting cash. So that is a dividend. And it should be subject to the SEC. It's no different than any other dividend. The question is, many countries internationally say, yeah, it is a dividend. The shareholder is getting something directly, but it's not the same. I mean, somebody gets cash or, you know, very proactive, but what you're really doing is you've got a parent and a sub, two different boxes, and you're breaking them up. And you're cutting in the path and saying, okay, you started out with one piece of paper, Mr. Shareholder, you amount it. So we often allow that because sometimes two companies just don't work together. You can say, well, that sounds kind of silly, but culture. Different boxes at different cultures, and you need to break apart. It's just part of the reverse of a merger, and that's why we provide relief, but only in limited circumstances where they're really, where the parent has an impact on the subsidiary, where they're really part of a group. Because what happens under old law is to say that all distributions of subsidiary, of shares, is okay in the old law. What would happen is you get around the SEC by having a company. Okay, I have cash. If I give it to my shareholders, well, it's going to be subject to SEC. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take that cash and I'm going to just buy shares in the open market and then distribute those. Now, it really is easy to get away with that, but there's a problem there. And that's not what you're looking for. You're looking for great efforts here. Okay, the last one is around effective dates. And again, these effective dates should get over. First was the question around unbundling, what we were doing on this bulky emissions. Now, I don't believe the bulky emissions have been paid out yet. Could I stand for correction? I'm not aware of that. This was a proposed amendment that we originally put in, and then we dropped. So nothing to perfection again, now we're putting it back in. So at this point, nobody should be disadvantaged. And if we do something, we'll make sure it's perfected retroactively. But the question you ask is, why am I moving the dates around? Sometimes we're trying to keep the type of industry. And sometimes we just discombobulate a little bit, and we think the date is one thing, and then we speak to another industry player, and then we find out the date is another. So the person we have on this is very good, but sometimes little mishaps happen. Sometimes the date moves because we find out a little bit later. We're trying our best to limit it, you know, to limit that kind of change. But, you know, there's always that one exception case that throws us off. And so unfortunately, then I'm forced to come before you and explain another effective date move. So those should not be moving around very much, but again, it's crucial.
These are flow from the comedy practice. They're flowing from things we picked up during the course of the amnesty as leading problems for people. So these are not amendments that actually impact vast numbers of people, but they are there and they do impact on some people. So we're proposing some changes just to assist them. The first one, which is on slide 2, is the eligibility of trust. Now, if you cast your mind back to the amnesty, the whole idea behind the amnesty was that it was for relatively unsuspected small businesses. And so it was limited to individuals, companies owned by individuals, and trusts where individuals with the issues. Because once you start getting into group structures and trust owning companies and companies with trust associated with it, it starts to become someone who is in the system and using it. And you should know what is going on. And if they're not paying tax, well, it's a more problematic situation. What we have discovered through dialogue with potential applicants and their representatives is there's a group of people who essentially bought off-the-shelf trusts, or off-the-shelf trust advice. And when we went through those trusts, all I can say is it was really bad advice. The sad fact of the matter is they're not stuck with it. And so what they had in the situation where, although the idea was to have a trust for only individuals with beneficiaries, because they used this off-the-shelf boilerplate language, they could have legal entities as beneficiaries, and that's sufficient to exclude them from that. So what we're proposing here, and that's in slide 3, say, okay, we hear your view that what you've done is create a trust that really was for benefit of you and your family as individuals. And we're prepared to relax the rules here a little to assist you. But you need to demonstrate that that actually is what happens. Okay? And so if you look at the test there, what we're saying is, have you made a distribution in the 2016 or the prior 2 years? If you have all those distributions gone to individuals? Because if you have actually made a distribution to individuals, you can't tell us that the whole idea behind this trust is just to help individuals. You demonstrate that that is not the case. So we assist there. And then on slide 4, this is a problem that primarily arises because we're very generous in the case. Essentially, there are some circumstances where if you get amnesty, that can give rise to taxable benefit. Okay. And what we're saying is, well, that was not the intention. You need to pay your amnesty levy. That is the price for getting your amnesty. Levying a tax on the fact that you got the amnesty really is not what we're trying to achieve. We will put a clause into the amnesty legislation to make that absolutely clear, so that this concern doesn't live out there. And once again, that should encourage any people who have come up with it as a concept and been deterred from putting that application form in. I must say, I was quite impressed by the analysis that arrived at this problem. It took a while to think through, and then we looked at it and said, okay, conceivably there is a problem there, so let's move to address it rather than have people worried about it. So a few changes that should assist people in these circumstances.
Now in the back of the letter, we are approaching the deadline. How are we going to approach the sectarian and how we also go to get to the
with respect to the first one, that is something that's been raised by some groupings of people. So all we need to do just then is to go back to those groupings and say, you know, we have made the change that would assist you. Okay, obviously, they may be not in those groupings. But once again, the first one should not be a widespread problem. Our information is that we deal with people in this situation. The second one is something that was raised by two professional associations with us, because some of their members had done this analysis and come up with it as a potential problem. We've communicated with those associations to inform them that yes, this issue has been resolved. As I said, this is a very technical process to take. I would be very surprised if many ordinary entities actually can even consider this an issue, because intuitively this shouldn't be happening, and we're saying that jury shouldn't be happening either. So we're just confirming what intuitively should be the case. So, you know, accountants and lawyers are there to explore what the issues are and to raise potential problems, and that's what they've done, and we're addressing that. The first point to be made is that the initial period of amnesty is in fact longer than the period for the foreign exchange and offered. So we started with a longer period across the board. like, I think, had about 40 cars there, and they weren't cheap cars. So people were there on Sunday to get their application. On the question of the SARS adverts, thank you for the comments. We are trying to reach out in various media. We may have seen posters on the streets, we do radio adverts, and of course what we've also been doing, and did last week, is mounting very extensive on the ground, us being on the streets in Texas. It was done countrywide last week. We had 3,000 SARS staff out visiting businesses, to talk to them, to check with them if they were compliant, if they were not compliant, to bring the entity to their attention, essentially to do two things: to raise the SARS visibility and also to make sure that people were aware of the entity. We also have an enforcement drive for people who are not compliant at the moment, so that potential applicants can also see that there is a risk once the entity is closed of SARS enforcement action. So we have service elements where we actually go into people, talking to them to make sure they're aware of the entity, and then of course the other elements which are having the sign to reach after the 31st of May. If you haven't applied,
thank you so much. Thank you so much for the session. Thank you for the session. We will be